Mom, say hi to the people.
Hi. Welcome to Find It Funny and Lisa Alvarado.
That was a good one. That was a good one. Tell them why they should listen to the podcast.
You have to love it. She's a good girl, a good, very funny, very ugly too.
She called me ugly 4 times now. This is take number 5.
Okay.
No, I like it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Find the Funny. I have a fantastic guest. I'm so excited about my very good friend, Brian Kiley.
I'm so happy to be here. Nice to see you.
He is an Emmy winner. Two now, right?
I have 2, yes.
Yes.
I mean, one's daytime, which does that count? I don't know.
I don't know. We should count that times 2 because nobody watches daytime. Old ladies. Yeah, so that one was from Ellen.
Yes. The recent one was from Ellen and the other one was from Conan.
Conan. And Brian was the head monologue writer for 27 years?
I was with Conan for 27 years.
27 yes. years. That is... You're so lucky, first of all.
I agree. Absolutely. Yes, yes, yes.
To have a paid gig as a comedian that lasted more than like 4 months.
That's true.
And you got a freaking Emmy.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I was able to have a job for a long time, which was great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And you're such, if you don't know his comedy, we're going to add links in the show notes because you have to watch it. He's one of my favorite comedians. So freaking funny. But you're more of like a one-liner.
I am, yeah. So which transferred easily for writing monologue jokes for Conan, you know?
Right. So when you were working for Conan, how many jokes would you have to do per day? Was there a quota or?
It changed a little bit over the years because like when he hosted The Tonight Show, we were doing more jokes. But generally speaking, I would write about 40 to 50 a day.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And on average, I would get 2 jokes on. So you write 40 jokes and 38 you just throw away and he does 2 of them.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So is it considered his content then? Like, because if he doesn't use it, can you use it on stage?
You know what? I could, but it's all topical and it's all so much for that day. You know, right. Lori Kilmartin, who I worked with, who's amazing, often would tweet them.
Oh, that's smart.
Kind of at the end of the week, she'd be like, okay, here's a joke dump. He didn't do.
Oh,
but
gosh.
So early on, I didn't want to have that dilemma of, ooh, do I keep this joke for me, for my act, or do I give it to him? So I used to do a lot of topical stuff in my act, but once I started working for him, I was like, okay, I'm just going to give him all the topical stuff, and I'll just keep the personal stuff for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Personal, but really not personal.
Yes, fake personal.
Fake
yes.
Personal.
At an arm's length personal. Yes.
At an arm's length. That's what. Yes. That is so funny about you is that you tend to be more of a cleaner.
Right.
Comedian.
Yes. I mean, I always try to work TV clean. You know, my.
Right.
Yeah. I always. Early on, I was like, you know what? I really wanted to be on Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
So I would work towards that. And I didn't make it. I didn't get on. But
you've done Letterman like.
I did Letterman and I did The Tonight Show with Jay and so on. Yeah. So I do try to work clean, which was not always appreciated in some of the bars that we work. You know?
Oh, I know.
It's
because you have to have some drunk person actually pay attention.
Yes.
Because they have to. Think to get to the punchline.
Sure.
Oh my gosh. I have so many jokes that I love from you. The one about your dad.
Which one?
And your brother.
Oh, that one?
I love this joke.
Okay.
Can you tell it?
Yeah, sure. I'm always, like, when people start jokes of mine, I'm like, where are they going with this? I'm always puzzled. And it's like, it's your act that you've done a million times. Why can't you think of it?
He's got hundreds of jokes.
I do. And I have this joke about, I don't understand the world today. My dad was having some health problems, so I had to go to the urologist. And the doctor asked him to bring in a sperm sample.
Yeah.
He asked my 85-year-old dad to bring in a sperm sample.
Wow.
So my dad brought in my younger brother.
Just never gets old. I just freaking love that joke. It kills me. I've heard it a million times. I'm like, can you tell it? And I'm like a little kid. I'm like, do the sperm joke.
That's so great.
Oh my gosh, I love that joke. But that must be so difficult to do 45 minutes of just what I do chunks.
Oh,
like
yeah,
5
yeah.
minute chunks.
And you do crowd work.
And I do crowd work.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I can't imagine.
Well, if I do 45, it is 135 jokes.
That's.
In fact, when I did my Comedy Central half hour, they had, you know, they have bullet points.
Right. Oh.
So I had 99 jokes, and they go, oh, that's a record, because there'd just be one out, you know, and then the next one, or whatever. But it's, if I'm doing it all the time, I can remember.
Right.
But sometimes you haven't done it for a while, and then you're like, what's the next thing, you know what I mean? And yeah. Also, I don't know, have you ever had this thing where you're doing your act, and all of a sudden you start doing a joke that you dropped like 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You go, I've started the joke, I have to finish it now.
How does it end?
Yes, how does it? Yes.
What's the punchline?
Yes, you have that panic of like, oh shit, I better remember how this ends. But also, you're like, what am I doing? Like, why did I suddenly go down this path?
Yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah. That's a terrifying feeling.
Oh, God. You're so, okay, so say something like that happens to you. Are you honest with the audience? Do you tell them?
I'm not honest with anybody. So I'm not going to start now on stage. You know what I mean? That's just not me.
Right.
But I might say, that I screwed that one up or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially if it's obvious. But sometimes you pull it off and you're like, oh, I suddenly remember that the last second, thank God.
So because you're not much of it, you don't improvise that much. The times that I have seen you go off script, though, you're really funny because you have that thing where you can come up with comedy really fast. You're just not as comfortable.
I'm not as comfortable. Yes, it gets me out of my comfort zone. That was actually one nice thing about working at Ellen, was that they would have me in rehearsal. They would have me be in the audience, and they would, you know, give me a mic, and I would have to
banter with her. Oh,
and in fact, I feel like 80% of my interaction with her, I was holding a microphone in the audience. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So that was fun. And then when you'd come up with stuff off the cuff and whatever. And, you know, we also had guest hosts. So sometimes, like, I'm bantering with Katy Perry or whatever. And it's also, it's the kind of thing of, if I were, like, there was a young guy that was like, Katy Perry. It was like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm too old to be in awe of Katy Perry. You know what I mean?
It would be creepy.
It's not like, oh my God, it's Katy. You know what I mean? I'm too old, like I get excited. I would get excited when, you know, legends from my childhood were, you know what I mean? Like seeing Mary Tyler Moore or Dick Van Dyke or Bob or whatever, people.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I mean, it was totally different than
Conan. It was so, you know, after working in late night for 27 years, we'd be in the room and I'd pitch something and they'd go, ha, 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 we can't do that. And I was like, what? And sometimes it just seems so innocuous. I was like, what are you talking about? That's, you know,
stuff.
But then there were other times where there'd be stuff where, we did this one thing where it was all these holiday fails where like these signs got cut off or whatever. So there was a wrapping paper that it was said, it's snowing, but then when you folded it over, it looked like it said tits now.
And I like those Mad Libs.
Yes. And I was like, yeah, who wants to wait for their tits? You know? And they cracked up the room, and then she did. I'm like, she can say that? And these other...
Wait, she did that?
She did that on the show.
On daytime.
Yes.
Oh, that's because she grabs tits. That's different. If you're into tits, I think you
guess,
can...
But I just said it off the cuff in the room.
Right.
And actually, that was where I had the most success, was just riffing in the... You know, kidding around the riffing in the room.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, okay. So it's just so funny how there are things that you plan and you write all this stuff and then they don't, you know what I mean? Sometimes they don't go for that. And then the thing you say off the cuff where you're kidding, they're like, let's put that. And you're like, what? Yeah. It was the worst at Conan one time. We used to do this bit called a staring contest.
That's awesome.
So Conan and Andy would have a staring contest.
Oh, right.
I don't know if you've seen it. So whoever would break would lose. Mm-hmm. So what would happen is they'd be staring at each other, and then they would have Conan would have ridiculous things behind him to distract Andy. So we'd have little comedy things behind.
Yeah.
So And one, I wrote one where it was like, the Pope comes out and then two teenagers steal his hat. They're playing keep away with the Pope's hat and it's going on behind. So it'd be stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I was home. I must have been home on, I think I was home on paternity leave or something, but I'm sending in stuff from home. So I write the real ones and I just, because sometimes you just write a joke for the room just to make people in the room laugh, but you're not serious about pitching or whatever.
Right.
So I pitched this one of a football quarterback putting his hands under the center to who's going to snap the ball, and he pulls out a gerbil.
Oh.
And I just did it as a joke in the room. So cut to the show. That's the closer. And I'm like, holy
shit.
Yes. I couldn't believe it.
That's so crazy, because that's like when we do improv in an audience and something just pops. You can't follow yourself with regular jokes.
Yes, that's true. That's true. That does happen sometimes.
I remember being in a club and I was an okay comedian, maybe 6, 7. It was like a bowling alley. It was something really difficult. And this guy kept talking on his phone, kept taking calls, like call after, like it was a call center or something. And after a while, I finally got so pissed and he was distracting people. He's in the front. I'm like, give me your phone. And it was his girlfriend. And I'm like, oh, well, he's not coming home tonight because he met somebody new. And you could hear her go, what the hell? Who are you? Like, the audience is going ballistic.
Sure.
And, like, I'm like, oh, look, he's wearing this. He's wearing, because she's like, prove it. I mean, I had a full-on conversation with her. She's like, who's there with you? Because she could hear the crowd. She hears, and finally, I was done. The bit had run its course. I gave him the phone back. I could not follow it.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Yes.
Yeah. All my jokes were like, wah, wah, because real in the moment stuff is electrifying. That's why I think all these comics are really taking off posting the heckler material.
Right, right.
Some of them is good and original, and some is,
oh, is it really?
Really
is it really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I think you have both depending on the comic and their level of experience. But there's so many times where I'm like, you start talking to the crowd and then now they don't want to hear your jokes.
Yes, I have. That is a thing. And it's also, it's like, you know, and sometimes the mic goes out and you say something or something, whatever.
Right.
And it's like, well, I can't recreate that. Do you know? Right. I keep recreating that for this. Yes. Yes.
Or your whole set is going to be, okay, you drop a tray of drinks when you walk in the door. You shit your pants.
Yes.
It's going to be like, you guys all have to come with me. What people don't understand in the audience is that to get really good at a joke, this premise or whatever you're working on, you have to do it over and over and over, and it develops into this big, long bit or one joke.
People always say that. For me, it's the opposite. Mine will start it out like this.
Long.
And then as I do it more, I'm whittling it down and cutting out the unnecessary words. So then it ends up this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And other people start out with the thing and then they build on it and it's...
Yeah. I'm the complete opposite.
Yes.
I start off with like a thought or a little... Actually, I have one and I was going to ask you about that. I love writing with Brian. Me, you, Karen Rontowski, Dana Eagle. Used to have this little writer's group and it's the best. When you can just shoot some jokes out or premises or ideas. This is what I have so far. What direction with your peers? It's so much fun.
Well, also somebody thinks of a different angle. You're like, why didn't I think of that? And coming at it from that way. Or even sometimes it's just a tag that's like, oh, that makes the joke.
Yeah. So I have this bit that I'm working on. We'll just workshop it here. Yeah. And you know what? Feel free, if you're listening to in the comments, write some tags because I'm trying to finish this bit. So it's about tattoos. I don't have any tattoos, and the thought of a tattoo scares me because it's so permanent.
Sure.
So it's commitment. And so what I usually do is I'll ask the audience who has tattoos, and almost half of them applaud. There's so many.
And a lot of young people have tattoos now.
Right.
Yeah. It used to be old sailors.
Biker guys.
You guys who were in the Navy for 40 years and now it's...
Exactly.
Yeah. Now it's 20
years. Everybody. Yes. It's like nurses it's crazy. Yeah. Everybody's got a tattoo, even if it's a small one. And then you have the people that are like covered. Either way, I have always been afraid of getting one because of the permanency of it. And then I ask, who has a tattoo that they regret? And it's, you usually get like at least five people in the audience clapping, and then I'll go into the audience and I'll talk to them about what is it and what happened and what do you wish it was, or so that's always fun. So there's an improv element to it, but the joke part that I wrote is that I have a friend that was dating this guy for 6 years and was engaged and was like, I'm going to get his name tattooed on my body. And I was like, oh, girl, you're not even married.
Right.
She's like, but it's been 6 years. I love him and we're engaged and we're not breaking up. And I was like, I think you should wait. Right? Yes.
Even if they're married, it's not a good idea. But
exactly. Like 50% of marriages end. Yes. So like just
and 100% of tattoos don't end.
Yes. They are forever. Yes. Exactly. Yes. That's why I'm like, dude, just wait a year. Wait. You know, wait till you get married. And she's like, I'm so in love and I don't care. So she gets his name tattooed on her body. She texts me a couple days ago and she's like, oh, so she's crying. Like, we broke up and now I have his freaking name on my body. I don't know what to do. She's like, it's expensive to get it removed and it's painful. She's like, ah. And I go, don't remove it. Just add a question mark.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Like that.
You know, that's one. So, yeah. Also, she could just start dating other guys named Larry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly.
And one of them, you know what I mean? Yeah. She could only swipe right on.
Yeah. On Larry.
This guy, he's kind of a loser, but he's got. He's Larry. What am I going to do?
You know
what I
mean? So, like, from behind, it's either like Tony or Tony? You know what I mean? It's, could it be?
Although the new Larry would probably be scared off if he saw, if, like, you know what I mean? Like, the first time he sees her.
Yeah. He's like, holy crap. Like,
she's rushing things.
Exactly. Yeah. This bitch wants to get married. Or the other one I was thinking is to just keep adding lines underneath it, like a guest book.
That's a great idea.
You sign in here. Like, and then.
That's a great one. I love that.
And I said, because my fear of commitment, and I do really want, I feel like if I find someone and fall in love to that point where I want to tattoo their name on my body, it's only going to be initials. It's only going to be initials. So you get your three initials, but one initial every 5 years. That's how it's going to be. So that's at least a 15-year commitment with me. 15, it's letter, 5 years, letter, 5 years, letter.
Well, okay. Initials also could stay, you know what I mean? Like if someone got mine, they could be, maybe she's just into Burger King. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, that's awesome. Well, the joke I wrote was that, you know, and I said this, and this is divisive in audiences sometimes, and I said, I could never date a guy named Kevin Keith Kern. Yeah.
Yes.
And then the white people go, what? Oh, that's not right. You're not being PC. And I said, that's why I'm saying I could never
that
date.
Yes.
I'm not saying I want to date.
You're on
a
the
guy.
Right sound.
Listen to
yes.
the joke.
But people don't do. Yes.
Oh, they just that hear makes, anything that, race.
Yes. And that's here you're doing an anti.
Right.
Yes. I'm saying how I would never do that.
Yes, that makes me insane. I know that feeling, and that makes me so mad.
Doesn't that frustrate you when you're
and
doing?
Plus, I know Kevin personally.
And so no question mark needed. I gotta find it now. I gotta find this guy just to prove the point. Your jokes have an edge to them, but they're not considered like dirty necessarily.
Yes, I would say they're not dirty. I think I can get a little dark sometimes.
I love it. It's so fun.
For me, I love those jokes.
Yeah.
But sometimes I can go, sometimes they're like, hey, you know what I mean?
Calm down.
So, yeah. So yeah. I'm not going to say something sexually explicit that you know, that they're going to recoil at, but I will sometimes do, you know, I have this joke about my grandfather had a heart attack and died in the middle of a game of Simon Says.
Oh, wow.
He said, he yelled, call 911, but we didn't fall for it.
I love love that.
And, you know, and so, and sometimes I do shows to these older people and they are not on board.
And I
write so many.
Dark jokes.
I really do write a lot of dark jokes, so I have to be careful.
Give them to me. I love the dark stuff.
I do too. I do too. But it's not always a big hit.
But you could be the bald Jeselnik. You could be the new.
I could, it's funny. I try to push it a little bit, but I can usually, you know, he really is like,
it's completely 100% dark. Anthony Jeselnik is a fantastic comedian.
Very clever, great writer. Yeah, absolutely.
Really smart jokes. He just chooses to go on the dark side.
They're so dark. Oh, my God.
They're so dark.
Yes. But he has his own thumbprint, which is smart.
I think that in the past he used to get booed off the stage or just hated, because if you don't know that personality type and you're just going to a comedy show.
Right. But he's big enough. It is that thing of the people that liked it would come back. So he built his own following.
He built his own following of people that love that kind of comedy. Yes. And I'm one of those people. I love it.
And people do that with their political stuff. There's some people that divide the crowd, but then the people that like that come to see it, and then they build their audience that way or whatever.
Yep. It's people that like a particular style, and it takes years to build that following, and you got to go through the pain of,
oh my God,
the audience is hating you. Yes. Just bombing after bombing after bombing, and only three people going, this person's brilliant.
Yes.
But that turns into six, it turns into 100, and then all of a sudden you're packing out theaters.
So much more respect for that kind of comic than just sort of the generic comic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I feel like I get some of that too with some of my material, because you know how I like to push the envelope.
Right.
And people, you know, what's interesting is sometimes you'll hear a guy talking about the same sort of topic in a dark way. And then when a woman does, they're like,
Oh, absolutely.
What?
Absolutely.
You're a lady. Yes. You can't.
Yes. And I see that with when a woman comic's dirty, where it's like, you loved it when the guy was dirty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now you're suddenly, I'm offended and whatever. So I had to do... Well, I probably shouldn't tell this, but...
Just tell it. You always got to tell it.
I did this show for this guy a while ago, and he was talking about the different people that... And the two people he didn't like were two female comics who are fantastic. And you're kind of like, I think this is a little problem that you have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they weren't even dirty. It was like, oh, my God. You know?
Yeah.
So... yes, I think there's a huge double standard.
Yeah, and they did this study where they took, they had comedians and or just men and women writing jokes, and they wrote them down, and they wouldn't tell the gender, and the women came out on top. When they said, these jokes are from men, and these jokes are from women, the men came out on top, and these were the funnier jokes. But when they took the gender out, the women won.
Wow.
So take that, bitches. Mm. That's why I have this thing in my act where sometimes I'll just say, you know what? If you don't like it, turn it around. Turn your chair around and face the back of the room. It's literally because they're angry that you look the way that you do. They're like, you're supposed to be some fat, out of shape, you know, whatever comic. That's funny. And it is funny. I think it's a slightly easier for them to get a joke or be self-deprecating. I try to be self-deprecating, people are like, what are your problems? I'm like, I have problems. You're one of them. You know?
Yes. Yeah. And you do see that where a guy is 350 pounds or whatever and gets like an extra bump.
Yes.
Because he's not threatening to everybody or whatever.
Right. He's getting that laugh. We've been friends for a long time.
Yeah. I would say I moved here 14 years ago. And I feel like it was pretty soon after that we started working together.
Right.
Is that fair?
Right. Yeah. I was going to say 10 to 12 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't remember our first gig or whatever, but we've done a bunch of gigs.
That one in Santa Monica.
The Scott Shannon room?
Yeah.
I think I might have. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gets a shout out. I love smart comedy. That's something that you like. It takes the audience a beat to get it.
Right, right.
There's such a reward, but the only problem with that is that if they're drinking too much.
Oh my God.
Or if they miss just a part of the setup, it's done.
Yes. And during COVID, I did the show where we're outside, you know.
Yeah.
And there's the highways there. And I can't remember the comic's name, and I probably shouldn't say his name. But he did like a 3-minute bit of like a 3-minute story. And as he gets to the punchline, like this tractor trailer. So then I said to the guy, and no one heard it. And it was like this 3-minute setup to nothing. Terrible. Oh my God, I was dying. You know? Yes. All of that work.
That's like doing a marriage proposal, you know, getting down on the knee and then you fall down the hill or something. It's like, oh, will
you? It was so close. And that is the thing of so many of my jokes hinge on one word.
Right.
And if somebody
interrupts
or coughs or something, and sometimes I've learned to just repeat the setup again and go, because that guy coughed at the wrong time or whatever.
Look, you cannot have COVID right now. This joke is more important.
A few minutes later. Yes. I'll be off in a few minutes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Is the winner of the 2007 Emmy for writing in a comedy variety series,
Brian Kiley. So I've done some research into my family. It turns out I'm super Irish. Even my blood type is O apostrophe.
So obviously the show is called Find the Funny. Mm-hmm. Is there any situation in your life that was, I mean, we all go through hard times, but that you feel like, man, I need to focus on finding some sort of nuggets in here that I can joke about to get me through this?
Well, you know, so I started out in college. I started doing stand-up in college.
Wow.
And then, they'd have me come in and do a guest spot and give me $20 or that kind of thing, you know? And then I was getting, okay, here's $50 to go to New Hampshire. And, you know, so I started out in Boston and I was in college. And then when I graduated, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go for this. So I started, you know, so I was just doing stand up.
Didn't have a job after?
No.
You just, wow.
I lived at home with my parents and I'm like, I'm just going to, and so then my mom got sick. So first of all, as you know, I hate opening up. So this is not like, this is the first time that I've ever opened up to anyone in my life. So this could be interesting. We'll have to see where this goes. I don't know.
We'll send this clip to your wife.
This is uncharted territory for me. So my mom got sick and I'm out doing shows at night, you know, and it was really the worst thing that ever happened to me. And it was just, you know, I'm 22 years old. My mother is dying of cancer. It was just heartbreaking. Oh, and I remember one time I'm driving, I can't remember, it was to a gig or from a gig, but, you know, those days you had to roll down your window and pay the toll.
Right.
So I pay the toll and I'm driving and I'm so thinking about this that I don't realize it's raining and I haven't rolled my window up. So it's like 15 minutes later, I'm like, seems kind of wet. And it's like, oh my God, I'm in such a fog, you know?
Yes.
And that, you know, it was doing shows was difficult, but it was also a nice escape.
Right.
You know, because you're home all day, with her being sick and all that stuff. And, you know, there were funny moments. Like my mom was the most Catholic person you could meet. You know, if I could only use one adjective to describe her, I would say Catholic. Yeah. We literally, not only did we go to church every week, but we literally had mass in my house.
Wow.
Like a dozen times.
No wonder you're a PG comic. guilt.
Totally guilt. There's so much of that. Absolutely. But my parent would be like their anniversary and they were friends with all these priests and all these nuns. So they would have a priest come to dinner and he would say mass in our living room. And then he'd stay for dinner and we'd go in the dining room and have dinner. You know what I mean? So it was just this, she was constantly having, like when the Pope came, to Boston in that time as a teenager, they had the Pope gave tickets to young people and the clergy. So my mother was not going to miss this, whatever. Yeah. So she went with a group of nun friends. Do you know what I mean? Here's my mother with five kids, posing as a nun, going because she wasn't going to miss the Pope.
And that's hilarious, like lying to get to see the Pope.
When Mother Teresa was speaking in Harvard or whatever, my mother went and lied her way in. It's like, who would lie your way in Mother Teresa? Do you know what
forgive
I mean?
Forgive me.
But she was not going to miss Mother Teresa. Right. It was like, you know. So I'd done a gig, and then the next morning, and you know, you're getting in at 2 a.m. or whatever. Right. So I get up, and it's like 10:30 a.m, and I come downstairs, and my mother is sitting in the living room with six priests.
Wow.
Six priests in my, and I'm like, Ma, what is this? Is this Vatican III? And I was like, there's white smoke coming from the chimney. And they were laughing and stuff. And it was like just a nice moment under circumstances. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there were those moments like that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I did find those few minutes that you went on stage, you had to just kind of put everything away. And it was just a nice, I actually heard an athlete talking about that, saying that whatever stuff he's going through when he goes on the field, you have to that's out of your mind for a while because you have to concentrate on what you're doing. So comedy was a nice escape for me in those moments, even though, and then the other problem I had was then I just started writing dark jokes because you sit down to write your jokes and all you're thinking about is death and whatever.
Right.
I did a joke about, I was supposed to go to this wedding and I showed up late and there was a funeral going on and I didn't realize and I'm saying, oh, you know, the lucky stiff, and I was making, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I had these, whatever, and I had, so I just had so many morbid jokes. I remember one time, and they did not always go well. A lot of times crowds are like, oh, that's enough, you know? But I do remember one time I got booked at it was a Christmas party for a staff at a nursing home. So all those people are dealing with this. They could not get enough morbid jokes. They were like,
isn't
keep them
hilarious?
Coming. Do you know what I mean? And it was like, this is my crowd. It was so, because, you know, they're immersed in it all the time. And it was like one after another. And I was like, all right. And I'm reaching to the archives and just doing these morbid jokes because it was like,
I love it.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, being able to joke about it. It just depends on each comic has their timing. Some people take 4 months or 6 months or a year before they can really talk about something difficult.
Right, right, right.
But our friend Lori Kilmartin.
Oh my God.
She wrote a whole, was it 45 minutes?
She did. She had.
Has a special.
A special about my dead dad jokes. And the other thing is what she was live tweeting about her dad when he was ill and when he was on his way out. And people picked that up and would retweet her, and it was like a phenomenon. And then I think there was even an article maybe in the Washington Post about it or something. It was
I remember seeing her at clubs while she was working that out, and I was crying laughing in the back of the room because
so
it was
funny.
Such smart, heartfelt. You could tell that she loved her parents. All
it
of
was
that
so real, yes.
It, but it was
it
so gritty,
yes, it
and,
was,
and just brilliant.
Yep.
And some people, though, I would always watch the audience where they feel like a bad person if they're laughing.
Yes.
And what we need to say as comics is we're well aware of what's coming out of our mouth, and if we're actually saying it, then we've felt the feelings, we've dealt with the pain.
It's not everyone likes that kind of humor. And I love it, and I know. But what she was so smart of doing was when she had her special called, I can't remember how many jokes about my dead dad. You know what you're getting. Do you know what I mean? So you can't come to the show and go, oh my God, I'm offended. Hey, I think you were warm. You know what I mean? But it's very difficult in a comedy club as opposed to like a one-person show.
Right.
Where in a comedy club, people, it's drinking and happy and whatever. As soon as someone says cancer, everyone's like, oh, whoa, whoa. You know what I mean? Like even if you're talking about astrology, they don't want to hear that word, you know? So it is that thing, you know, but Yeah. And also, and conversely, when I go see someone's one-man show and it's just their act, it's like, no.
Yeah.
The one-person show, you've got to really spill it and, right. and open up or whatever, which is why I'll never do a one-person show.
Yeah, because you love to really spill
yes,
it.
I'm not doing that. But I do... When I see that, I want that's the kind of thing where you want them to open up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to put Lori's information in the show notes because you have to check her out. She's one of the best comics out there. I mean, just prolific. And, her writing.
And fearless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She has gotten so much shit about everything. Every topic pretty much as she puts out there. Like they just know that she's the comic that's not going to back down.
You know, all of a sudden you're in hospice with your dad and you've never heard of these things before. I was just sort of tweeting to my, you know, I think I had like 7,000 followers at the time, and probably most of them were other comedians.
Like everyone else, I was just watching the situation unfold as she was, you know, posting about it. She is being brutally honest about what's happening to her father. And you knew where this was going, and everyone knew where this was going. She was telling us what she was going through, and she has a comic mind. And I thought it was really beautiful.
My dad turned 83 when he was dying. That was a very strange birthday. We knew it was his last birthday. And it was odd. It was like, I didn't know what to get my dad. Do I get him something he wants, or something I want to inherit? In what would seem to be weeks. I got him an iPad.
Well, if you didn't get enough of Brian Kiley, you're just like me. We need more Brian Kiley. So in 2 weeks on a Tuesday, you are going to see part two, and this is going to be all about joke writing. So tune in for that. See you guys next time right here on Find the Funny.
I hope everybody listens to my daughter and see it and laughing with her because she is very funny.
That was great. That was perfect, Mom. Perfect.